Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. For the fourth time in 5 years, Missouri led the nation in the rate of black homicide victims. A national study using the most recent data available, which happened to be in 2012, showed that Missouri had 35 homicides per 100,000 black residents. That's nearly twice the national rate. The big question is why? That's our first segment this morning. Joining me are Detective Maurice Otis of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. He works with the Kansas City No Violence Alliance. Detective, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with him is Detective Michael Lenore. Michael, nice to have you too.
Good to be here.
And also with me here in the studio are two officials with Aim for Peace. That's the group that tries to halt violence before it breaks out. With me is Salan Houdin Abdulwali. Salan, good to have you again.
Thanks for having me on.
Markel Harris is also here. Markel, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, how surprised are you, Salah Houdin, that Missouri ranks so high when it comes to the number of black homicide victims? Again, these numbers are a couple of years old, but what do you make of it?
Well, I'm not really surprised because if we look at the conditions and the mindsets of our youth and our people in the community, in the urban core particularly, it's a consistent pattern with violence breaking out because you upset me. You stepped on my shoe. You was talking to my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
You betrayed me. And so we see the consistency in the culture. The culture, it doesn't change. Only the language changes.
So it's a cultural issue is what you're saying.
I think it's a cultural issue. It's a mindset issue. And you talk about people don't behave in violent ways when they have been nurtured with love, when they're in a right state of mind, when they have been nurtured. And so this is a behavior pattern that we're associating with as far as a clinical approach and diseases.
Detective Otis, what do you make of it?
Well, I agree also that the culture and the socioeconomic status of the African Americans in the urban core, it's kind of a brewing point for violence. In our urban core in Kansas City, Missouri, the makeup of it is mostly African-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And when you mix in people who are at a lower socioeconomic status and they're trying to make money, if they're felons or they've been raised in a broken home, their broken home could be caused by drug usage. There's a lack of love and nurturing that exists there.
Just basic stuff that a lot of families sort of take for granted.
Exactly.
That maybe is missing in some families.
I believe so.
Yeah. That's tough to hear.
Yeah.
Detective Lenore, what do you think?
Yeah, I think they're definitely hitting the nail right on the head with that. There are kids are a product of their upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with where you go to school, what your parents had to offer you, whether, you know, that be monetary, whether they're able to give you something intellectually. We are a product of our upbringing for generations. So what my parents were able to put into me in my upbringing is largely responsible for who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have people coming up in an area where they're disadvantaged, they've been disenfranchised, they don't have some of the resources, the schools aren't great, their parents are working multiple jobs, and they don't have a whole lot of time to spend with their kids, then what you have are children coming up ultimately raising themselves a lot of times because they didn't have what some of us had when
mm-hmm.
we were growing up, and they're going to try to find it somewhere.
You know, Markel Harris, you know, this community, this is no surprise to you, has been talking about this issue for a very long time, years and years, in fact. You know, what I hear here is this idea is it's a cultural thing. It's sort of embedded within the society. That sounds like it's going to be a really tough nut to crack and break the cycle going forward. Am I right?
I definitely agree. I think the things that you've been through and the things, you know, the violence that we've been exposed to is going to mold who we are. It's going to mold how we react to things. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And so how do you begin to change it?
New information, changing a person's paradigm, changing the way somebody looks at violence, you know, teaching a person about themselves, teaching a person that violence, you know, it's not normal, and conflict is inevitable. So we want to teach people how to, you know, teach people about themselves.
And that's what Aim for Peace is all about, right? That's what the model is, what you're trying to achieve out there.
Yes, we definitely have a clinical approach. You know, we We don't really look at people as good or bad. We understand that people have been affected by violence. We understand that they've been exposed to it. You know, I've been exposed to it myself, so we definitely understand that. And we won't get we want people to look at it in that form.
Detective Otis, I looked over crime stats for 2014 for Kansas City, Missouri, and one thing that stood out was the number one motive for homicides last year. Now we're caught up time-wise. We're talking about 2014. The number one motive for homicides was argument, which may not come as a surprise to people, but the argument category accounted for 18 homicides. The next closest motive was drugs, which triggered 9 murders. Any surprise that argument would be the leading cause here?
There really isn't a surprise to me on that.
It's a pretty general category, right?
Correct. You know, as right now with this No Violence Alliance, we have been working with people like Center for Conflict Resolution so that we could try to help people find a better way of settling the argument. Right now in the community, it appears that an argument is settled with violence. You get into this kill or be killed mentality, and you understand that if I had a conflict with someone, then you're afraid, you're in fear of your life that they're going to come after you later on and try to kill you, and that person tries to strike first. So when you have this constant battle between people, it's a little hard to escape that violent mentality.
That sounds like the Wild Wild West.
It does sound like the Wild Wild West, unfortunately, but this is something that we're trying to break. We're trying to change this to show people that there's a different way.
Detective Michael Lenore, the kinds of arguments we're talking about here, give me an example. What are we talking about?
Unfortunately, it could be anything from I feel like you disrespected me in some way to a conflict over a girlfriend, a basketball game.
You disrespected me in some way. That can be, what does that mean?
It could be anything. It could be anything.
You looked at me the wrong way.
You'd be amazed. You'd be amazed some of the, what we would look at as insignificant reasons for people resorting to violence. And I think a lot of times deciding to take that action has less to do with the severity of the perceived infraction on that person and more in the lack of a coping mechanism or a different way to deal with conflict. It's just like what they were talking about before, where conflict is inevitable. We face conflict every single day, but having the tools to deal with that conflict in a way that's not violent is something that's lacking sometimes.
Some people, you're saying, simply don't know how to resolve conflict. Is that what you're talking about?
It's that, and that people feel like what he said before, it's normative behavior in some circles, and it's perceived that if I don't deal with this conflict with violence, then I'm going to be perceived negatively. I'm going to be perceived as weak, and that there could be negative consequences for that. So oftentimes, it may not even necessarily be the route that someone wants to take to resolve that, but they feel as if they don't, there could be negative recourse on them as well.
We're going to talk in a little bit about what the Kansas City No Violence Alliance is doing along these lines and what Aim for Peace is doing, because, again, both these programs are aimed at sort of cracking this thing. Salon Houdin, again, this idea of argument being at the core of so many violent moments, these reasons can be pretty minor, we're hearing, right? And you're familiar with this.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we want people to realize is conflict is not necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Where the conflict goes wrong is, as the detective mentioned, is when it breaks off into an argument. But we always want people to understand that violence is curable and it's preventable. And Margaret Wheatley, one of the most famous things that she said that resonates inside of me is she talked about communication.
And who's this now?
Margaret Wheatley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she talked about communication, and communicating factors are very important. You talked about, you know, communication such as visual, just your body language, the posture of your body language when disagreement takes place could be enough to infuse a person to get angry. You talk about aggressions matching aggressions. And so we see all of these elements going on in sports, and sometimes those things are misconceived. These are competing factors.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes down to a conflict, people are competing to show I am tougher than you, or I am better than you, I'm stronger than you. If we take a step back and look at it, we should be at a point where we can agree to disagree and mm-hmm. be able to resolve this issue.
Markel, when you're dealing with someone who's between 18 and 28 and they're hot over one of these, you know, these disagreements we're talking about here, how often can you walk them down, and how tough is that job?
Sometimes it can be very tough. We just did a mediation up at De La Salle.
At the high school?
Yeah, at the high school where some guys had got into it. And it was pretty tough for about 45 minutes. Didn't anybody say anything to anybody. And
it was all silent.
It was all silent. They said, we ain't talking. We don't want no resolution.
But, because that would be seen as a sign of weakness, maybe.
Absolutely. Maybe if we had them one-on-one, they'll open up more. But, you know, amongst the group, they don't really want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we get away from the fundamentals that, you know, as a man, my feelings can be hurt. And they don't understand that yet as young men that, you know, really, bro, your feelings is hurt and you really don't know how to express that. You've been taught your whole life to express that by going crazy, you know. That's the element we want to leave them with, you know, moving forward. Be able to sit down and have a talk about what you're doing. Talk about what's going on. You know, put it on the table. And if we can't figure it out, we can't figure it out. But we put it on the table and we know what's going on now.
Hey, how did you break that silent log jam there? What did you do finally to get them talking?
Did
you get mad?
Nah. It was a natural icebreaker. One of them was saying, I got jumped. And the other one told him, well, I got jumped too. I was fighting some grown men. And it just made everybody in the whole room start laughing. You know, dudes who was just gritting. So I think if you buy time, you know, and you just keep working and you don't give up, you know, you just don't give up, keep working with them. They just share the natural laugh. It just happens, man, because they all human beings at the end of the day.
It took you 45 minutes to get there, though.
Took us 45 minutes to get a laugh out of everybody, and it just came natural.
And then, once the ice gets broken, how quickly did things begin to move ahead in a positive way?
Well, the mediation was about an hour. So after the 45 minutes, after they shared the laugh, we got some stuff out on the table. We found out that two of the guys who were on the opposing side used to be friends. And with that being said, you know, we asked them, did they want to stay at school? Because if they couldn't figure it out, they were all going to go home. They all wanted to stay at school, and we figured it out. We walked up out of there. We all walked out together. And
y'all shake hands?
They didn't shake hands, but they walked out together. You know, it wasn't no security in between them or nothing. They had a mutual respect, you know, being able to coexist. It didn't have to. Every mediation don't have to be a kumbaya moment. I just think sometimes you got to know that.
You got to take what you can get sometimes.
Exactly.
Man, okay. Detective Lenore, this was interesting to me going back to some statistics I was looking at last night, again, based on 2014 numbers inside of Kansas City, Missouri. 41 of the 76 murder victims were black. The next closest category of murder victim was white male at just 14. Now, turning to suspects, the flip side of the coin, 40 of the suspects were black males. The next closest category was white male at 12. This is, you know, the quintessential black-on-black crime that we hear so much talk about and we have for so many years. Those numbers surprising to you?
They sadden me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if at this point it's a surprise. It's a trend that we've seen for quite a while.
Those numbers are overwhelming.
They are overwhelming, and the disparity is overwhelming. But I think when we look at it that way, we need to maybe use that information as far as where we want to allocate our resources and how we want to try to focus what we have available to us to try to reduce those numbers.
And again, that's what the Kansas City No Violence Alliance is about. You're targeting your resources in specific places, unlike what's happened in past years.
Absolutely. The mm-hmm. resources that we have available are things that we've never really had at our disposal before, and they are all being focused specifically at reducing violent crime.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize that it's a huge problem, and we recognize that we need to try to approach it in a way that we haven't approached it before. We've kind of operated in the same manner for years and years and years, and we haven't really seen any market improvement in those numbers. So now we're utilizing anybody and everybody who wants to be on board with reducing this violent crime. We want to work with them. We're using the Center for Conflict Resolution, like Detective Otis was talking about. We're using social services, working hand in hand with social services so that we can provide people with options that they didn't have before to hopefully change their situation to make them less likely to be involved in violence.
Detective Oakley, but we did see a breakthrough last year. I mean, in terms of just this one category of crime, I'm going to talk about other categories of crime that they weren't so promising, but at least when it comes to homicide, we were down to 76 inside Kansas City, Missouri last year, lowest number in a whole bunch of years. How big of a deal is that?
It's an extremely big deal. it's pretty encouraging. We know that a lot of resources have been allocated into getting this homicide number down, getting violent acts down, and these the group-related crimes, the things that we believe that we can prevent, because it's hard to prevent a crime of passion, any domestic violence. It's hard to, we don't know, we can't predict that, but a group-related violence is something that we believe that we can make an impact on, because there are people who are being encouraged by others to do violent acts.
Yeah. I want to go to some phone calls in just a minute at 816-235-2888. We're talking this morning about the fact that for the fourth time in 5 years, Missouri led the nation in the rate of black homicide victims. This is a study based on 2012 numbers. Again, our number 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Salon Houdin, you know, one thing I'm still confused about here is there something about the heartland, something about Missouri that has us with these high numbers in terms of black homicide victims year after year? What's going on here that appears to be different than what's happening in many other parts of the country? What is it?
Well, I think, you know, some of the things, there's a big commonality between the information that we're sharing right now in regards to what the detectives have shared as far as the systemics of the economical conditions of the people.
But you can say that, you can make that argument about lots of big cities around the country.
Yeah, but, well, you know, when it boils down to it, we want to get to the nuts and bolts. We want to talk about the mindset of people. It's a contagious aspect. So when we talk about
the mindset here is different than it is other places?
Absolutely. This is a very unique place to be. So when you go places, you say, I'm from Kansas City. Kansas City has a history for being, you talk about Union Station, the gangster, the history behind the Northeast gangster reputations and all these extravagant, you know, 18th and Vine. So we have a very rich history here in Kansas City. And it's almost like you have, a standard that you have to, you know, stand up to, that I'm going to live by the gun and I'll die by the gun.
Because that's the reputation you see, that sort of that the reputation you think that Kansas City has for at least some people around the country.
It's almost riveting, you know, to say the least, when you have people who understand that kind of that kind of image that we bear here. And so you have just in the 90s, we were classified as Baby California. And so, hey, you know, that's a reputation that people have a tendency to want to uphold. That image is very powerful. But what we understand is it's a mindset that's contagious. And so our objective is to stop that transmission. So you have your little brother who's 7 growing up. He sees the guns, the drugs. He sees your homeboys hanging over with the Crip clothes on, with the Blood clothes on. You know, I'm from this neighborhood. I'm from that neighborhood. So to them, that's exciting. But they don't have all the variables that come along with that type of image.
And this is what, again, what Aim for Peace, sort of what it focuses on, is this notion that violence is a disease and you can cut it off and deal with it once it's seen in those terms.
Absolutely, because we have 3 objectives. To detect, that means to figure out what geographics that we're working in has the highest propensity for someone to be shot or killed. And so then we want to engage the individuals who are perpetuating these type of behavior patterns. And then we want to work with them and give them the medicine, which is the message, to change the mindset. And then our goal is to work with these individuals on a consistent basis, looking for them to change their own behavior patterns.
Okay, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Jim from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yes, I had a question for Fella Dean, and it was in comparison to Nova. I know of and have heard of all the good work that's being done by Aim for Peace, but it doesn't seem like they get the same publicity, you know. For them to be going out, you know, and talking to people after a shooting and going to the hospitals and dealing with the families and all of that, but you hear very little about that. So I was at my question to Solid Dean was, you know, how did he feel about that? And I would really like for him to keep up the good work that I've been hearing about him.
Jim, thanks. Salah Houdin?
Well, you could kind of look at Aim for Peace like a small market. We're still trying to hammer away with the message in the community that violence is curable and preventable, that it does move around like a disease. And as far as us not having the same kind of notoriety. First, I want to say that we look at the KC Nova, the police, Ad Hoc, and all these other agencies as community partners. And so we don't spend our time focusing on whether we're going to receive the kind of same attention. I just think that we have to get to a crossroad where we realize that it's going to be necessary to have a group leadership as far as the goal and creating a healthier and safer community.
Markell, you guys want more money from the city. You want more violence preventers out there like yourself on the street. That's what the message I've been hearing from you guys.
Yeah, we understand it that we play a small piece in, you know, stopping violence as a whole. And we take a clinical approach, so we understand that. I like to say all the time, it does take a village, you know. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do, we're going to focus on what we do and try to do that to the best and, you know, support our community partners.
Yeah. Back to some calls here. Shane from Kansas City, Missouri. Shane, you're on the show.
Hello.
Hi, Shane. You're on the air.
I was wanting to know if Aim for Peace does community events in the Northeast area, like neighborhood cleanups and barbecues. For over here, and what can we do to get more awareness about the Aim for Peace program in the Northeast area?
Yeah, thank you, Shane. How about the Northeast, gentlemen?
Absolutely. We just expanded to the Northeast area, and we definitely do cookouts to mobilize the community. In those cookouts, we play music, we distribute Aim for Peace material. That's a good time for people on our staff to pick up clients, you know, people that they'll work with day by day to, you know, help better them. And that's what we're doing. We're going to be out. We're going to be visual. We're going to be canvassing the Northeast area. You know, I'm looking forward to it. That's actually my zone. So, yeah, we're definitely in that area, and we're going to be looking forward to some cookouts and be looking forward to seeing me and the team. So, yeah.
What are you cooking at the cookouts? you going to get me up there?
If you can.
Yeah. Mike from Kansas City, Missouri, the Waldo neighborhood. Mike, good morning.
Morning. I just wanted to say, you know, there's so many people, I shouldn't say it that way. There are people I know that they don't give a damn if a group of people are killing one another. And my comment is, it's a citywide problem, whether you're in that area or not. So that's my comment.
That's interesting, Mike. Thank you for that. And along those lines, there's a new book out. Its title is Ghettocide, and it's by a Los Angeles Times reporter, Detective Lenore, who argues that as a nation, we've grown far too accepting of our high rate of homicide, in large part because the media has paid too little attention. That makes sense to you?
We certainly, I think, as a nation, have grown to see these what are truly atrocious acts as being more commonplace. I don't necessarily know that if you look at the statistics, if it will indicate as such. I think that the perception of the amount of violence occurring in the country over the last few decades is largely fueled by media attention.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever a lot of people see on the news is all people will know about a certain area. I mean, I don't know what goes on in Afghanistan unless it's on the news. I won't be there. That's not some place that I frequent. The media is going to put attention on the things that they think are going to get them ratings. It's just, I mean, that's only common sense to them. So I think that people's perception of certain areas, of certain problems, is largely fueled by what they see on the media. Having said that, the last caller spoke about how this problem is a citywide problem.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely right. I mean, if you have one part of your body that is completely and totally diseased and dying, it will ultimately affect your entire body. And the fact that we have people out there that recognize that just because this problem isn't right next door to me is still a problem that I need to be aware of is something that is remarkably encouraging. And those are the kind of people that we're always looking to partner with. This NOVA thing is, it's not just about the police department. It's not just about the prosecutor's office. It's not just about social services. Our biggest partner in this NOVA thing is the community. We go to as many community meetings as we can. We meet with as many people in the community as we can, because ultimately this is their place and this is where they live, and we want to help them change their environment as they see fit.
Let me ask my last question, Detective Oakley, in a different way. I mean, I'm wondering, is there enough priority being placed on solving these murders? Because, again, this new book, which has gotten so much attention, Ghetto Side, argues that that's not happening.
A lot of effort's getting put into solving these homicides. In fact, I believe our homicide unit is doing a great job. The biggest part of it is that we need people to step up and speak on it. Officers, we aren't out there as the homicides occur. The people in the community actually are. So if anyone sees it, it really helps when they speak up to us, and it helps solve these crimes. But we have here, like, in 2015, of the, 16 homicides we had, eight cleared. You know, these, our homicide unit is really working hard. They're doing a great job. This NOVA program is also kind of clearing the air for people, and they're seeing officers in a different light. We're approaching things a lot differently.
Yeah.
And people are becoming more comfortable actually speaking with us, and we understand that it's, the group-related things are something that we are really tackling and are able to tackle. Like I said, the ones where it's a domestic violence or just a random act, they're really hard to stop. But we're able to solve these things. Like, so we're putting our best effort forth. So.
And I should point out, 16 homicides so far this year inside Kansas City, Missouri, 14 at this point last year. So we're not far off the pace of last year, which I guess, given how low the numbers were last year, that's a good thing, at least so far.
Well, it's never a good thing seeing any type of homicides. But,
yeah,
you know, it's we're trying not to get too excited too early because, you know, crime is trendy.
Yes.
So it could spike at any time. Like in 2011, we had 111 homicides, and we only had 11 at this point at that time. So we're higher than we were in 2011 then. But, of course, 2011, we had a huge spike at a point versus 2014. So hopefully we can keep that number down.
Salahuddin, you've been concerned about what you're seeing out in the streets right now. It's been a little more violent, a little more troubling than what you want to see right now.
Well, yeah, you know, the each year from the Aim for Peace's approach, we kind of analyze why we have the spike in shootings and killings in the areas that we're specifically assigned to. And obviously our approach is, and our methodology is different than the approach of our detectives here. As far as you're talking about, we're not being in a position. Our goal is not to be out and arresting people and taking that kind of approach. Our goal is more of a due process approach.
In fact, you guys don't work very closely with the police, if I understand right. You sort of do your own thing.
Well, yeah, you know, and we want everybody to realize that we don't see the police as a foe. We see the police as community partners. It's just that at the end of the day, we have a different perspective on how to approach violence, and our methodology is different. Our approach is understanding that violence is a disease and clearly looking at it like we're doctors. We're first. So when a doctor has a patient and the doctor understands this patient has HIV, then the doctor is not in a discriminating position. The doctor understands that if this person's behavior patterns were more natural, then they would have not more likely come down with that sickness.
Yeah. Detective Lenore, let's talk a little bit more about KC NOVA and how it works. It's been credited with so much of the success here. Tell me, it brings together how many agencies and how do you all work together?
We work together very well right now. We have, like I've mentioned before, the prosecutor's office, the police department, community organizations, faith-based organizations. We have Mothers in Charge, which is a very powerful tool that we have to utilize. And Mothers in Charge is comprised of mothers who have lost sons to homicides. And they will also come out to homicide scenes and talk to folks there to just try to comfort the family and kind of bridge that gap between ourselves and these families. And they respond to the call-ins that we do when we talk to the people that we've identified as being at risk, to kind of give them a perspective of this is what could potentially happen to your mother.
And you guys even provide social services when it comes down to it.
Absolutely.
It's a full service kind of situation.
Absolutely. We work hand in hand with them. Ultimately, what we want to see is for people to change their behavior in a way that will help them be successful, stay alive, stay out of prison, and be good productive members within their community.
I want to thank you all for coming in today, Yuval, and thank you for your contributions here, not only to the show, but what you're doing out in the streets. I want to thank, again, Detectives Maurice Otis and Michael Lenore, and from Aim for Peace, Salahuddin Abdulwali and Markel Harris. Gentlemen, thank you all very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Come back again. We'll talk about it some more. It needs to be talked about.